It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, joined as always by my pals, David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Hi, guys.
What she would do to Cole Porter was criminal.
Play us a song, piano man. Oh, wait, no, that's Billy Joel, Bob. I'm sorry. I watched the wrong episode. I apologize.
Captain Jack,
right
we'll
away.
Get you high tonight, though.
So I'd like to begin this episode with our letter segment. I know it seems a little unusual, but I'm going with it. The letter begins, "Hello, Jason, Philip, and David. Hope you are all doing well. I was so excited to hear the update on the new season. It's funny.
I was doing well until I got this email.
I was thinking about emailing a few weeks ago to check in about the new season and completely forgot. I may just be masochistic, but you're living up to the podcast here. I feel the need to live up to the listener Blair title and ask again for you to consider season 2, episode 1, Billy Joe Bob. Is it great? No. Is it bad? Probably. Do I love it? Yes. To me, the beauty of Magnum is the balance of absurdity, drama, and humor. And this has all three in spades. It may not have aged terribly well, but neither has a lot of Magnum. I love James Whitmore Jr. as a rough and wild Texan, especially after seeing him as the sniveling Beamer with Tom in the Rockford Files. He also appears again in Did You See the Sunrise? I know you'll probably tear into me for suggesting it, but it would definitely give you guys a lot to joke about. All in all, I'm just glad you three are back. Hearing the update felt like catching up with some old friends. I can't wait to hear the new season. Signed, Listener Blair." Oh boy. And you know what?
And our most loyal and hated listener.
And so we do, Billy Joe Bob, season 2, episode 1. Thank you, Listener Blair.
We live to serve.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken, James Whitmore Jr. was in like 3 failed pilots with Selleck.
With Tom Selleck, yeah.
Including Chinese typewriter.
He was in Black Sheep Squadron with Larry Minetti, thanks to Stephen Cannell. Larry Minetti was in Battlestar Galactica, which Belisario wrote on. I don't know if James Whitmore Jr. was ever in that. I need to go on IMDb.
So,
hang on.
If you're saying to yourself, well, why does Listener Blair get all the love? Just email magnum@theincomparable.com, and you too could subject us to episodes of Magnum PI. Gentlemen, I'm going to recap this episode, Billy Joe Bob, but I wanted to say before we got started, I would like to submit for your consideration that this, by the way, again, I just have to repeat this, the season premiere of season 2 of Magnum PI.
Oh, they're rolling out their best stuff to reacquaint us with that detective. This must be a really good episode to get the season off on a right note.
Now, despite what Listener Blair said about loving this episode, I'm not going to say I loved it because I didn't. What I am going to say is I feel like this is the maybe of all the episodes we've watched, the model of the most generic Magnum PI episode.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I will go with you on that.
This is a Rosetta Stone Magnum episode.
Right? And it feels like it's all the bits, all the parts, all the structure of like your most, like you might not see all these bits in one episode, although you do here, but you will see many of them in many episodes of Magnum PI.
And it's just the plot itself is like a generic paint by numbers 70s Private Eye show.
Yeah.
Plot.
It's Mannix. It's just, canon. It's whatever. Yeah.
And it just keeps pummeling you in the face with them, which is appropriate for Billy Joe. I was kind of curious because I know I've seen it before, but it is not one of those episodes I remembered well. And that's always a bad sign for me. Mm-hmm. And so I was paying attention when the writer's credit came up and I was like, Jeff Wilhelm, who the hell is Jeff Wilhelm?
The Kaiser.
Yeah. And so it kind of
Jeff Wilhelm
shows.
Has 7 credits.
We will get to those. I have a segment on that.
Oh boy.
But yeah. Yeah, it's just...
It's 8 credits, technically.
It's kind of like... It's almost like a spec script, right? It just came in over the transom.
I had read, and it clearly isn't Magnum Mania, magnum-mania.com, the Bible of the Magnum podcast, mm-hmm. that this was intended to be a backdoor pilot episode for James Whitmore Jr.
Whoa.
I have no evidence other than it is tucked in my brain as a little factoid. I can't imagine that to be true, because I could not imagine anyone wants to spend week after week with this terrible character, let alone...
I mean, it definitely had backdoor pilot the feel of that to me.
Well, that's but just the presence of James Whitmore Jr., David. Yeah.
I was just like, I don't like this guy.
No.
And then we got 44 more minutes of him.
He punches people, and that's his bit. Each week, find out who's his love language.
Yeah. Who is he going to punch this week?
America is punching itself over.
It's curious.
Billy Joe Bob, why are you punching yourself?
Why do you keep punching yourself?
It's just curious that episode one out the gate is from somebody who had no other Magnum scripts, and it's so generic. But who knows? Maybe it was left over from season one. I don't know the reasons why, but it's super generic.
And if I'm not mistaken, there was a writer's strike in 1980.
Oh, well, that might very well explain
part of what threw off the season. It's part of what threw off Selleck getting to be in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, so they end up contracting with Jeff Wilhelm for this one, and they're like, yeah, sure, and they probably did a pass on it and said it was good to go for maybe another script fell through. It wasn't ready for season two, so they put this one into production, and here it is. So this episode begins with a jogger. As you know, in the 80s, a lot of joggers out there. And she's run over. She realizes a car is following her and probably going to run her over, which is why she goes off the road and in through the trees. She literally has, like, tree trunks to weave through to prevent a car from getting her. She doesn't do that. She stays on the path until the car is about to hit her. And then she goes, ah, and the car hits her and her body flings into the water.
Well, not only that, Jason, she literally turns around and screams stop at the car.
Yes, that's
as if
true.
That's going to make the car stop. Instead of running towards the canal and diving
and
in.
Where
the car cannot go.
Yes, plus she could run through those two trees that are right off to the right, and the car will not be able to go there because they will run into the trees. And she could, but she doesn't. Bad strategy, I'm just saying. That's bad strategy. She's dead. Dun, dun, dun. What does it mean? We'll find out. A cowboy shows up at the King Kamehameha Club, asks the guy at the front door if he speaks English.
Keoki, asks our beloved Keoki.
Keoki in his first appearance?
That's his first appearance. Yeah.
Yep.
He has appeared before, but not as Keoki.
The actor's name is Patrick Bishop.
Always endearing, by the way, when a white guy gets out and asks a brown person, do you speak English?
Yes. Well,
I love him already.
Well, what an introduction.
That was intentional. anyway, so then another guy comes out and says, no, didn't you listen to Keoki? You can't go in there. At which point he punches him. He just punches him, knocks him, lays him out.
Knocks him into like a stone wall.
Yeah, because he's got to see Magnum.
Yeah.
He could, again, all he has to do is say, look, tell him Magnum's in there. Just tell him I need to see him, but he doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, inside, Magnum is trying to get out of paying TC for something. Well, that's a Magnum PI thing, isn't it? TC's complaining about it. It's like, no, you can't take the copter for an hour. It doesn't matter if you only use it for 15 minutes. You pay for the whole hour. And it's like, no, I don't want to pay for the whole hour. Rick comes by just to say, hey, there's a guy looking for you. And also, TC, shame on you for dressing like that. You're dressing like a fool at the club, which
Rick comes to confront Billy Joe.
Oh, Billy Joe Bob about punching his guy.
For punching his employee. And then because he's like got the fight or flight instinct on, that's why he shouts.
He dresses down TC. It's mean. Yes. Don't do that, Rick. Yeah.
But
this guy's Billy Joe Bob. He's just looking for his little sister. She ran away. She went to the islands. It seems like she's sad. He's been busy punching people. He doesn't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And again, how many times did Magnum PI do a story about an ingenue who ran away from home, came to Hawaii, and got caught up in trouble? Lots of times is what I'm saying.
Take
your pick. You got your Luke with Gillis episode. You got your Frank Sinatra episode. There are others.
Yep.
Anyway,
I enjoy.
Yep.
The bit I enjoy is that the backstory is that Billy Joe's sister left Texas to go make it in the music industry, so she went straight to Hawaii.
Hawaii. Yep.
Flying yeah. over Los Angeles, not going to Nashville, not going to New York. Nope. It reminded me of that line in the Muppet movie where Gonzo says he's going to Bombay, India to make it in the movies.
Yeah.
They say, don't you go to Hollywood? Well, sure, if you want to do it the easy way.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, and I'm sure that you could say that there was a leap there where she came to Hawaii for some other reason, but then she got the opportunity to sing. It does lead to the line that the guy says, which David said at the top, which is probably the line of the episode, which is what she would, because you're talking to this guy, and they're already suspecting that she was involved in prostitution and all of that, and it's like we're going to talk to the bar owner, and it's kind of shady, and it turns out that he actually cares about music, and his line is what she would do to Cole Porter was criminal. So good. So I mean, not her, she was obviously terrible, but that line, really good.
That it is a good line.
Good line to Jeff Wilhelm, or probably the producer who rewrote it and put that line in there. Also, in Andrew that same Schneider. Scene, Magnum is like, yeah, but maybe you could give me a look at her personnel file. And his response is, what do you think I am, the Bank of America? All right, dude, come on, calm down. Yeah. Anyway, he does.
And then Thomas has a good response. Like, well, surely you've got a W-2 form, or, you know, I guess I could go talk to
the IRS.
And get you those forms, and yeah. you know, that is a clever ploy.
Yes,
I'll give him that.
Yeah, he blackmails him basically, and like, you know, you can just help me out here, and he does, so they end up. What ends up happening is on Maui, except it's not, but they say it's Maui.
No.
There are some Japanese guys fighting with swords. They receive an alert about Magnum. And the main guy is like, oh no, they can't, you know, follow him. And he's sniffing into our business, and you gotta check him out. Magnum
and
goes.
Who is the main guy played by?
Seth Sakai.
Our old friend Seth Sakai.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is unfortunately, no limousine full of ninjas this time.
Unfortunately, the limo ninjas were left behind. Although there are two goons. They only have the two goons.
Yes. He really had to dial it back and only hire a few goons this time.
Yeah.
I also appreciate on my version of it when he's quizzing his goons about Magnum, and Seth Sakai clearly says, well, is he competent? Except the closed captioner thought, is he confident, is what they transcribe it as. And I think that's delightful that he's, well, does he have self-confidence?
Yes.
Is he easily rattled? What? Tell me about him.
Is he a sad sack?
Yeah.
What's he feeling?
Yeah. Will we be able to undermine him? I need to know all his weaknesses.
So they got to check out Magnum because he's sniffing around. Meanwhile, Magnum has gotten that information from the bartender, bar owner guy. Goes to the Kahana Towers. It's very fancy. He breaks in to her apartment. There are some messages there from guys saying, oh, honey, I want a little meetup.
Real glance into the 1980s prostitute industry here, because they spell out some unsavory requirements for the jobs that they're doing. Like, there's whipped cream involved and redheads, yep. And oh boy.
It's they're called call girls for a reason. And the reason is that they got a big answering machine, a reel-to-reel answering machine, apparently.
Yeah. I did not know that you actually detailed everything that you wanted the hooker to do.
Up front. Yep.
Up front.
Well, so yeah, this is before you had...
prepare an itemized invoice.
Well, she gives you a quote then. Based on what you request, she gives you a quote.
Oh, whipped cream. Oh,
and then you can shop that around.
Oh,
and
boy.
Find the best deal.
That's going to be at least $40 for the dry cleaning.
Yeah.
This is before you had a website where you could choose all those things, yeah. or if you had enough money, you might have a phone tree that allowed them to just go through the choices.
It's why Domino's really excelled in the prostitution industry for a while.
It really
They let you select things just like a menu, and then they brought the hooker to you in 30 minutes or less.
Or it was free.
Yeah.
For whipped cream, press 2.
Avoid the Noid.
So
no, you should avoid the Noid when
I mean,
you
the
see
Noid costs
because...
extra.
Now, the Noid, that will require a penicillin shot.
She's not into that kinky stuff.
Had a case of Noid.
So Magnum is caught, though, by the cops, who say, you know, you're a suspect in a murder. And he's like, what murder? Her murder? Oh, what? She's the runner. Oh, Billy Joe Bob's sister, who just came here looking for fame to break into the music industry in Honolulu's underworld. Oh, no, she's the runner who got run over. Oh, no. Anyway, so Magnum and Billy Joe Bob go into the CD underworld after the cops let him go in a voiceover because they got nothing on him because he was obviously working with his brother and trying to solve her disappearance. They go to a bar. They talk to a lady and offend her. Then the working girls come. The working girls give him a name, which is Ito-san. And then Ito's guys, who we saw in that previous scene, these are the non-limo ninja guys, but they do have nunchucks. And the nunchucks knock out Billy Joe Bob. Magnum gets the best of the guy who didn't get knocked out by the punch from Billy Joe Bob. And yet one of the girls hits him over the head. They wake up in the parking lot.
She uses the nunchucks as a blackjack, which I thought was very,
very clever.
Very creative.
So they're into some trouble. Magnum needs a favor from Higgins. We don't know what it is, I think, yet. But and the deal is, like, you spread a bunch of manure around here, and I'll do it.
And again, classic Magnum trope. It's the bargaining.
Exactly. Bargaining early Magnum, bargaining with Higgins for privileges. Or in this case, you do some gardening. He's like, I'm not qualified for gardening. And Higgins is like, you're qualified for this. I just need you to, whatever he says, they're like, reorganize some
recycled plant foliage. Material.
Recycled vegetation.
Recycled through what?
Recycled.
A cow.
Through a cow.
Anyway, the favor is to sick the lads on Billy Joe Bob, who's staying at Magnum's, so that he can get away without having Billy Joe Bob tag along and punch people.
I like that part.
He takes he takes TC's chopper to drop him off at Ito's place in Maui, where as he's walking to the door, as Magnum-Mania.com, the official Bible of the Magnum podcast, points out where they shot this, there are a lot of feral cats, and as Magnum is walking to the door, you can see one of the feral cats walking along in the background. So when you watch this episode, check that out. Look for the feral cat. You get a no prize. Anyway, Magnum is not really there to investigate because he talks to Ito. He says, you got 5 minutes. And he's like, well, you killed her and we're going to nail you. That's his whole thing. And he says, she was a common tramp, greedy, ambitious, lazy. And Magnum says, aha, but I have her diary. And they're like, who would believe a prostitute over a man like me? And like, over a guy who's killed people and selling drugs and all of that. I think maybe they would.
He's been described as the Al Capone of the islands.
Yeah. So then he reaches on his desk because he sits on a tatami mat with a little tiny table where he's doing calligraphy most of the time, I guess. This is what he does. But he also has a sword but he also has a checkbook, basically. So he reaches for his sword. Is he going to get his sword and cut Magnum in two? No, he's reaching for his wallet. In a moment where he does not say, you drive a hard bargain, Mr. Magnum, but that is what he is essentially saying here. And Magnum plays him for more money and says, I got to talk to my client. But really, you could tell that this is all a setup. And when he gets back from from Maui in the chopper, a detective is there. What is that about? Why are the police there? Well, hold on a second, because before we get to the big reveal of what is about to be a big twist in the episode, there is... You know that viral video clip of that Columbo episode where the Columbo walks all the way across a very large room, goes to a payphone, puts in his coin, dials a phone number on a rotary dial where most of the numbers are eights and nines, and you're just watching this because it was when NBC wanted a 2-hour version of a Columbo episode, even though they wrote it for 90 minutes. Well,
yep.
This episode was running short because Billy Joe Bob is slowly, oh so slowly, rifling through all of Magnum's possessions. And after several minutes, he finds a rope. Whew!
So,
what a scene. What a scene.
This is the point where I actually wrote down.
Did you pass out at this point, David?
Hard to stay awake. And I'm watching this in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
I was falling asleep, and I actually paused This is where I got curious about Jeff Wilhelm. And so I looked him up, the master of suspense, we'll call him now. On IMDb, he has just a couple of script credits. He wrote an episode of The Bob Newhart Show. He wrote an episode of Eight is Enough. He wrote an episode of Hunter. That's his last credit. But the show for which he has the most credits, he was actually the story editor of it. Well, I will say this leads to a new segment. Tales from Super Train. Yes. The infamous 1979 NBC series that dared to ask the question, what if the Love Boat, but an atomic-powered train,
yep,
a super train,
if you will,
yes.
Co-created by hot rock novelist Donald Westlake, and produced and directed by Dan Curtis of Dark Shadows and the Winds of War, Super Train lasted for 9 episodes, and Jeff Wilhelm was credited with 2 of them.
And was the story editor on 5 of them.
Yeah. I just want to look at just one of them that actually has a Magnum connection. And we're going to do it quickly because that's the best way to look at Super Train.
Yep.
He wrote an episode called Pirouette, which features Joyce DeWitt as a long-lost heiress hunted by her family's maid, Isabel Sanford, chauffeur James Gregory, and here we go. There's no limo full of ninjas, but Gardner Mako.
Hey, Mako.
He's not a secret ninja. Oh, well. But she thinks they're out to get her, as do her bodyguards, Jamie Farr and Vic Tayback.
Oh.
She escapes from them and reporter Tony Danza by hiding out with, quote, nervous gynecologist Bernie Coppell, taking time off from the Love Boat.
To be on the atomic train instead.
To be on the atomic train. If you're inexplicably curious about this episode and more, visit nbc_supertrain.tripod.com, the official Bible of Tales from Tales of Supertrain. And now, I woke back up from
research.
And I started watching the show again.
He found the rope.
So he found the rope.
We have our own backdoor pilot now.
Oh.
That's right.
Wow, that did. I feel like I went in a fugue state there while Billy Joe Bob was very slowly going through all of Magnum's possessions, cataloging them, lining them up, alphabetizing them, and eventually.
But did he find the saxophone or the rubber chicken? No.
So the big reveal, if you remember vaguely back to when that happened, is that Billy Joe Bob's sister, not dead. She got hit by a car into the water. A shoe was floating, but guess what? She's not really dead. And now you may notice
she could swim.
She's also the mom from TV's Small Wonder. Or should I say,
yep,
she is the mother from TV's Small Wonder.
She clearly used that robot technology to survive the crash.
Yeah, maybe so.
They could rebuild her.
For people who don't know what Small Wonder was, it was a syndicated sitcom, which is the lowest form of sitcom, about a scientist who invents a robot who is going to be his daughter. Her name is Vicky. She is super powerful, speaks in a monotone, and the show is unwatchably terrible.
You are insulting the good work of Check It Out starring Don Adams, I think.
Phil, you know? I actually it gave me a little pause because I thought to myself, arguably, Check It Out with Don Adams is as bad or worse than Small Wonder, and I wasn't going to get into it because I thought I don't want to subject people to the supermarket sitcom starring TV's Maxwell Smart Don Adams called Check It Out, which also
how dare you insult the work of She's the Sheriff with Suzanne Summers.
Which or had multiple pilots.
And Mama's Family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of very terrible syndicated sitcoms in the 80s and 90s, is what we're saying. But I think Small Wonder.
Pretty bad.
Small Wonder is really bad.
You've got Out of This World, but Small Wonder beats that.
I think
we were
the target audience
for Small Wonder.
None of them are good.
The revived We've Got It Made? No.
None of them are good.
No. Small wonder.
Even technically, the revived WKRP in Cincinnati is in that category.
Oh, that was not good.
No, it was
I
not
love
good.
WKRP in Cincinnati, and that was not.
It was not good. So she's not really dead. Meanwhile, Billy Joe Bob has used the rope to construct a system by which the door opens, Zeus and Apollo come in, go down the stairs as he goes up the sideway and gets out. Aha, take that. It's revealed that Billy Joe Bob's sister is going to testify so that they get Ito because she is a witness. She was his mistress, but she was going to leave and get out of Hawaii, but she knew too much, so they were going to kill her. And that's why, after being hit by a car, she went to the police and said she would testify against him. Unfortunately, in a tragic, almost Shakespearean misunderstanding, before this information can reach Billy Joe Bob, he has stolen TC's chopper. There's nothing. He can't fly. And he's going to go to
Maui. He's a crop duster. Yeah. He's a crop duster, already setting the plot in motion for the Billy Joe Bob series. Where
he's a crop duster, and therefore knows how to fly a helicopter.
And flying from city to city to solve crimes.
To punch people.
To dust crops and solve crimes, and he's all out of dust. So time to solve crimes.
Mostly just punching.
I pause here when I keep writing down TC's chopper. Shouldn't it have a name? Shouldn't we have a name?
I've always thought that.
For TC's helicopter?
I headcanoned this in 1983 or thereabouts that it was just the Island Hopper.
The Island Hopper.
Yeah, it's the Island Hopper. Since he only has a fleet of one helicopter.
But it's plural. Island Hoppers. Surely
well,
there are
the
more
people
that's
that he
marketing.
Takes.
Oh, they're the Island Hoppers takes. On the Island Hopper.
Yeah.
All right. It could be Melody. If you're missing Melody, it could be her. But all
Dad,
right, could...
you named your chopper after me? Mm. Really, Dad?
Anyway, anyway, Billy Joe Bob, though, showing that his expert crop dusting skills, when he's landing TC's chopper, there are three goons, three thugs, three bozos. Are they bozos?
Oh, I love this bit. No, yeah, these would be bozos.
Are these bozos or are they turkeys? Bozos. I don't know. No, they're bozos. They're bozos. And he does a thing where he like moves the chopper so that the landing skids like smash into them and knock them all down unconscious.
No, I
and
think
or
they're
dead.
Dead.
Maybe.
I think they're dead because first off, he walks by them and makes no attempt to disarm them or tie them
right.
up
and
or
much
do
later,
anything to subdue them. And then Magnum lands later and sees them and goes, oh, look at those three. Look at those three dead guys.
Yeah. Could
no,
be.
They're dead.
Now, at least one of them, played by Roland Knipp, who played the pawnbroker in All Thieves on Deck. In this, he is credited as second Japanese. He is also in one of the Michelle episodes as second Vietnamese.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the second trumpet, a journeyman.
Player on Hawaiian shows.
He's smashed by the chopper. So death by chopper, Phil says. I think that's fine. Death by landing skids. Anyway, there's the face off with Ito. Billy Joe Bob has a gun and the rope. And I thought, well, what is that all about? Turns out he's going to hang him. He has him on a chair. Magnum and the police chopper come to the rescue. Magnum again. Yes. Takes a look at the dead guys and goes, all right. And then runs on, is like, geez, I hope he didn't crack the landing skids because TC's going to charge me for that. Runs in, and then the secret code that allows him to unlock Billy Joe Bob out of murder mode is he calls him Pickles. Pickles was his nickname, and he'd only know that if his sister really were alive. And therefore,
because he was married to Buddy Sorrell.
And therefore, what a relief. He's not going to kill Ito. Presumably, Ito will... I don't know. She'll testify against him, and he'll go away to the Graybar Hotel.
I think it was a nice actual bit of writing continuity that Billy Joe points out that Magnum has lied to him throughout this episode
repeatedly. Yes.
Yeah. So why should I trust you? Quite correct. Billy
and trapped
Joe.
Him with mad dogs trying to kill him. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, Pickles was his nickname. That's the code word. And then it's okay. Cut to final scene.
Pickles is the safe word.
Higgins spreading manure because he let Magnum down by allowing Billy Joe Bob to escape by not being there. He blames himself, and therefore he's not going to enforce the deal, and he's going to spread the manure. And Magnum says, Higgins, you know, you're a really good friend for that. I really appreciate that. And that's why. And you think he's going to say, I'm going to help you out. And he says, I'll be thinking about you while I swim. And he leaves. Suck it, Higgins. The end. Yeah. And that's Billy Joe Bob. So Listener Blair, is it great? No.
No.
Is it bad?
Yeah.
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 Do we love it?
No.
I have a confession to make. Many of these episodes, they fade in and out of the brain pan. Sometimes you're watching them and go, oh, yeah, I vaguely remember this. And of course, there are others, the really good ones that you do remember. This was a bad one, I remember, because each time that we sit down to discuss which ones we're going to watch next, I flip through my list of episodes and Billy Joe Bob pops up and I go, oh, God, no. Absolutely not. With the guy who punches people all the time? Yep. No, we're not doing that one. And then Listener Blair suggested it, and I had two thoughts. One was, of course. And the second one, my second thought was, no, we're going to do it this time because Blair has to learn.
Punchy, punchy.
Yep. 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 Blair needs to learn. Like I said, I feel like this is the most generic Mad Men episode. Yes. It has all of the bits that you see totally recycled. Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be an episode that you would show to people to say, well, this is the skeleton of Magnum, but you wouldn't show it to them because the skeleton is filled with rotting flesh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
But I also want to point out the one very rarely do I notice continuity errors in these episodes because I'm not always watching that intently. But what? You can clearly confession. You can clearly see when Billy Joe gets in the helicopter and he puts the headset on. Why is he doing that? To communicate with the... I'm stealing your helicopter!
Yeah.
The headset is labeled Jones.
Ah, yes.
And I'm all, wait, that's not TC's name! And it turns out it's the name, apparently, of the guy who's
the actual pilot.
The actual pilot who would be flying the helicopter for Magnum PI shots. So that's a fun little bit to notice. That even if you're relatively thick like me, you can spot.
And again, speaking of Columbo dialing eights and nines, there are a lot of shots of Billy Joe Bob flying the helicopter. And,
oh man!
It's cut to another shot of him flying the helicopter. Oh, now it's a higher shot of him flying the helicopter. It just goes on. And then because they probably spent so much money doing that. That's just your end credits. It's just that sequence all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so the one thing I will give this episode, if you watch it on Freevee, it still has the original opening credits from season 2.
Oh.
So, you know, you get to see Higgins as a backpack, and you get to see TC drinking against the rain-soaked blinds, and, you know.
That's it.
Pay attention to the credits.
It's fine.
So since I don't have anything else nice to say about this episode,
mm-hmm.
That brings me to another exciting segment of Tales from Supertrain.
Okay.
believe it or not, there is another Magnum connection, sort of. In the pilot episode for Supertrain, singer and actor Steve Lawrence guest starred as a man with a large gambling debt being pursued by an assassin. Considering there are 9 episodes, there are a bunch of episodes with people pursued by assassins, including one where the assassin is Dick Van Dyke. It's kind of cool. But the name of Steve Lawrence's character? Mike Post.
Hmm.
Although the theme music for Supertrain was provided by a guy named Bob Cobert. It's a Magnum connection. This has been Tales from Tales of Supertrain. Ask for it by name.
I will not. Anything else we need to discuss here?
Did you get a letter, Jason, that you would like to read?
I only got the letter from listener Blair, and I read it at the
well,
top.
Well, I have a, oh. Then I will oh. take it. Then I'd like oh. to introduce a segment called Phil Takes Over the Letters segment.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Or another segment I'd like to call Jason, check your spam filter.
I guess so.
This message is from Christopher Shatini. I'm clearly misreading that. Sorry, Christopher. It's listener Chris, whose comment led you to create this email address 3 years ago now. I love the show and always listen as soon as an episode goes up, even though I have never seen a single episode of Magnum before your podcast. I don't have any substantive feedback. Well, thank you, Chris, for writing. But since you complained about the lack of listener mail, I wanted to respond to your objection to the idea of first annual.
Oh, man, let me add him.
Maybe uh-oh. This is better for uh-oh. A robot or not question.
It's not.
The objection to first annual is perspectivist, and I think first annual is a useful phrase. First annual is unambiguous. One, this is the first time we're holding this event. We intend to hold it, two, we intend to hold it once a year. In the same number of syllables as inaugural, you give the listener one more piece of useful information. How often you intend for it to recur. If you just say the inaugural Robin Masters Pro-Am tournament, we don't know if the second one will be next week or in 4 years. It will never happen. There were lots of murders at that tournament. I don't think people say you can't call something daily or weekly until the second one occurs. I think you could say, welcome to the first episode of Tales from Tales of the Gold Monkey, a weekly podcast hey! Where we recap the hit show. Granted, your show might be canceled before the second episode. It surely would. Or you might get sick and only upload the second episode after 2 weeks. But it's still a weekly show because you intend to post weekly. Is the fear that calling it annual is jinxing it when it's so far out? Keep up the good work. That's listener Chris taking us to task for understanding common English and yes. the words that words mean something.
Listener Chris, one, I want to say thank you for your letter. Thank you for being a loyal listener. We really appreciate it, especially since you hadn't even watched the show before. Really appreciate it. And two, you could not be more wrong. those are my answers.
I would like to pull out from behind this floor plant the creator of Supertrain, who intended for the show to last longer than 9 episodes.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other episode of Tales from Tales of the
I'm just saying,
Gold
be careful, listener
Super
Chris.
Tramp.
Listener Christopher, be careful. You wouldn't want to be put into the Turkey or Joker or Bozo filter, okay?
No.
Be careful.
Or the listener Blair filter.
Be very careful there. But I believe that something is only annual after it occurs a second time. You're right. You're right.
I agree with that.
First annual.
Yeah.
Saying first annual is a, as they say, a tiny prayer to Father Time that you will pull off a second one after you've pulled off the first one. And you know what? There's some optimism there, but I strongly believe that you should not do that because you haven't earned it. It's not annual until you hold it the second time. It's just, we hope it's annual. First, I'll tell you what, listener Chris. First, we hope it will be annual. Fine. You could do that. Possibly annual. Would like it to be annual. But until number two, it's not annual. It's not. Also, by the way, unlikely that the Pro-Am tournament is going to be occurring every month, right? Unlikely. Yeah. Unlikely that it'll be.
Listener Chris dropped in the corner. He's getting the whole song.
That's
anyhow,
it.
That's the Magnum mailbag and
thank
send
you.
It to the address I should have looked
in the spam filter and I did not.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really great. So we got two letters in this. Mm-hmm. Who's worse, Chris or Blair? And that will lead us to our new segment, the first annual Who is Worse competition.
It will be weekly.
All right, last segment of this episode. What are we watching next? Because that's a thing that somebody, a dear listener, I don't remember who, asked us to do. And so we do it now. Ooh, we're getting into spooky Halloween season. And that's why you will have to, David, you'll have to watch this one during the day too, so that you're not frightened by.
Oh, I fully expect to be scared out of my wits.
As selected by David and not a listener. But in the spirit of the season, we're going to stick around season two, just moving a couple weeks forward to episode three, The Woman on the Beach. Is she on the beach or is she a ghost? We'll find out next time.
It's a Rick-centric episode, and so
I'm
just going to apologize now.
All right. Well, we'll be back with that one. But until then, this has been Magnum Podcast. I've been Jason Snell. They've been David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Bye, guys.
Man, I'm just telling you, Super Train. Just
punch!